enthusiasm, the mathematician said there's nothing I can't do if I use words and numbers right. And I have a hunch, if I use them together, that I can do anything!
If I may, this might change, I mean, because we're kind of talking about the sun moon here, this might change the course of the conversation a little bit, but one of the reasons I was drawn to mathematics was because there seemed like there was an answer in mathematics, you know, and it seemed like all of these ancient cultures were really focused on mathematics and geometry. And I think one of the reasons that, I'm absolutely convinced of at this point, one of the reasons that these ancient cultures were is because they could give an answer to who they were and where they were going in life, and if you will, if there is a creative force. Like, we speculate all the time, what is it? Is there, you know, some sort of deity or God, or is there an intelligent force behind creation? Well, when you go into mathematics and things like that and look at, like, the sun and moon, right? You know, the moon and the sun perfectly black out one another in a lunar and solar eclipse. And this is, you know, this is just kind of this beautiful marriage in the heavens. And to me, what this is just screaming is saying that, hey, there's architecture, that this couldn't be an accident. You know, the moon is, and really what it's doing is lining up three different heavenly bodies, because it's not just the moon and the sun. In order for us to see that and have this harmonious marriage in the sky, the sun has to be so far away from the moon, and the moon has to be so far away from the earth, and those bodies have to be particular sizes. So the sun is, you know, 864,000 miles in diameter, and the moon is 2,160 miles in diameter. And this is a multiplication of 400. You know, volumetrically, the sun is way bigger than the moon, but that's really simple math when you look at it. And so it's like when you ask a question like, okay, you know, what is this more evidence of? Is it more evidence of that harmonious geometry playing out in our sky? Is that evidence of a creative force, an intelligent force behind creation, harmony, proportion, ratio, geometry, blueprints, architecture? Or is it more evidence of what science is peddling? The idea that there's no blueprints, no architecture, no intelligent force behind creation. When you really get down to the
coincidence. They would say,
yeah, just right? A coincidence. And then you'll leave, and it's like, okay, well, in my opinion, if you said that that's just a coincidence, or if that, you know, that's, you know, there's no intelligence behind creation looking at that phenomenon, to me, that's kind of nuts, you know? And then, of course, they'll say, well, you know, the moon is being pulled away from, you know, the sun or the earth. It's actually drifting far away. So in a few millennia or whatever, we're not going to see this event, right? Well, then you are mapping. It's like, okay, after 13.75 billion years of cosmic evolution and, you know, roughly 4 billion years of earthly evolution, we just happenstance on this moment in all of time that we just see this. Once again, you look at the map of that, and it's like, well, no way, you know, there's no way. And so this is, I think, one of the reasons that these ancient cultures focused on this, because to me it was, you know, the proof of an intelligent force behind creation lies in the mathematical proof.
You even mentioned...
Last night I made a graphic that I put on my website, and it shows the total distance from the highest mountain, Mount Everest, to the deepest part of the sea, the Mariana Trench, is 64,800 feet, and that's 99.9% exact. And there are 6,480 years in each season of the great year of Earth's precessional cycle. And there are 6,480 degrees in a dodecahedron. So these things are all using the same code, 6480.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then once again,
I don't know if you take that, if you think there's any connection there, other than just this number. Is it evidence of design, or is it just that I just happen to notice these things and put them together? And that's what humans do, is make patterns.
I'm trying to find here in Norman O'Brown's Life Against Death, he has a thing in here where he's talking about gold to silver, the relationship or the ratio between the two. For the longest time, they stayed the same for an incredible length of time in the ancient world. So they managed to keep it completely consistent, though changing the value. And they didn't know why for the longest time, apparently. I mean, people didn't generally know why. But it turned out that it was the relationship between the sun and the moon gold being the sun and silver being the moon. And it explained why they never wanted to change it, was because they were looking to basically replicate that relationship in the material world of money. I thought that was really interesting.
It is amazing, yeah. And how silver as an element has an atomic mass that is 108 grams per mole, and its radius is 1,080 miles.
You know, Marty mentioned this idea before about a sort of key. You know, was there a lost key and all these sorts of things? And to me, again, it's hard to say which comes first, you know, chicken or the egg type thing. But I think it's interesting when I look at, say, like the Masonic story of Hiram Abiff, and we have this idea that there is, in the Bible, there is a character, Hiram, so we know where that name comes from, but there doesn't really seem to be, at least that I can find, a precedent for the name Abiff. And then I, one day, was sort of playing with this idea of squaring the circle, and I was thinking, you know, Masons have this idea of degrees, that you go up through the stages in degrees, right? You're a 33rd degree Mason. So I was like, well, there's 360 degrees in a circle. What happens if we literally square a circle would be 360 times 360. And what you get is 129600. Well, if you just swap out those letters and numbers, 1 being A, 2 being B, 9 being I, 6 being F, you get a bit.
Wow.
That's a good one. Especially in relationship to Osiris, you know. Isn't his story kind of correspondent to the cutting up of Osiris in a way?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's the same story. Yes, yes. Osiris, Jesus, Abiff. Yeah, there is actually, I found something on a Masonic website that was talking about the Rosicrucian roots of this name. They thought that it was a cipher for Jesus. Like, I'm going to screw this up, so don't take this as word for word. I could actually find it, but I'm not going to try it at the moment. But it was something like the name was a sort of like a code or anagram for, it was like our Jesus of the Rosy Cross, you know, something like that. It was like, it was a code for something. And that was one theory, but basically saying that these were all trying to encode the same architecture, or at least paying respect to the same archetypes. So absolutely they're the same.
You know, the name Hiram Abiff is, you know, High Ram is talking about, of course, in the zodiacal makeup of man, it's talking about your pineal body, you know, because the ram is, of course, associated with the head. And so the fact that you're talking about High Ram, and then AB means father. I think it's in Latin. I think it means father. And so, of course, this is where we get the Aleph, the alphabet, etc. And so when you have IFF after this, this gives, in English gematria, of course, this just gives you the numbers 566. Well, 180 degrees of a triangle times pi is like 560, what is it? It's like 565 point something. Sorry, give me a second here. It's really close to 566. Yeah, 565.56. And so, you know, you have this idea that you can actually take apart the letters of a name, just like Hiram Abiff, and get a much deeper, now we're into Zodiac, now we're into the spiritual process of the ascension process, which is, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Now we're into the 180 degrees of a triangle. What's the triangle? What's three becoming one? You know, this kind of idea. So these names, I think, were crafted by very, very intelligent people, but with very, very specific means. If I may give you another example here, the name David, of course, we have David and Goliath, the Star of David, etc., right? David is, in English gematria, is 41554. This equals 19. Well, the sun in the cipher is S-U-N, is 661, and this equals 13, and moon is M-O-O-N, is 1221, and this equals 6. So the merging of the sun and moon equals 19, and this is David. Okay, well, that seems kind of like a specious connection. You're just taking 19 plus 19, you know, equating it to 19. Except when you multiply David, so 4 times 1 times 5 times 5 times 4, this equals 400. And just as we were just talking about, the diameter of the moon is 2,160, multiply it by 400, and you get the diameter of the sun. Mm. And so all of that is encoded in five letters. You know,
In Hebrew, David is Dalet Vav Dalet, which in Gematria equals 14, which, as I was saying earlier, is, segments of the hand, the Rosicrucian cross, which folded becomes the cube, which is actually the star. David literally is translates as the boiling pot in alchemy. And to boil is obviously a mixture of fire and water, which the Star of David is made of a fire triangle and a water triangle interlaced, so to speak.
So it's a boil, he brews, right?
Right, so yeah.
Nice, yeah.
Good one. I never heard that one.
You know how I was saying the distance from the highest mountain to the deepest part of the ocean is 64800 feet? Well, if you multiply that times 2, it's 129600, which is 360 squared, squaring the circle.
Oh, wow.
So that ties in with what you're saying.
Yeah, there's a phenomenon in watching Secrets in Plain Sight where I'm literally I'll watch an internet video and I'll have my mind blown to some degree, but this is like over and over and over again. I have to it takes a while to go back to the quote unquote normal world after watching something like that, just because you get hit with one after another, after another, after another. And after a while,
it's really dense with information like that, you know, more so than most programs, I think, where it. That's why originally I released it as like 15-minute segments, because I thought that would be enough.
Just make it more digestible that way, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you guys? We spoke about the movie Pi. Have you guys ever had a sort of dark, chaotic moment where you're like the character Max in that movie, where it's like it's all too much?
Not for me. I'm pretty stable and
good to hear.
Yeah.
Not me. I'm gonna fly off the handle right now. No. Honestly, no. I agree. I haven't in my life. I would say before I got to mathematics, I definitely had Dark Night of the Soul. I've definitely seen some dark places. That sort of thing. But I never had a point where the mathematics overtook my sanity or anything. In fact, if anything, it's brought me more, it's made me more humble and more appreciative of my own life, which the idea of equating that stuff to mathematics, any sort of psychological equilibrium or something like that is kind of absurd to a lot of people. But I've had no problem. I think it's been one of the most wonderful experiences I've ever had in my entire life. So
I've had major problems with that. But only so if I'm working on a particular point of where I'll play an album with a film and I'll be doing it over and over and over again to find the timing that I'm looking for, where I want everything to fall into place to a degree that it's not supposed to on its own. And there'll come a time sometimes where I've literally watched a movie up to 14 plus times, just over and over again, trying to, with the sound off, trying to get this album to align. And I'll literally feel like I'm at the brink of my sanity because I have to question what I'm doing. Every time I find another one, I become more confident. But I still inevitably feel like with each new one, like I might be going totally insane, because the assumption being oftentimes that I don't know if it's the intention of the artist, or whether or not it's just the universe. But there's been enough cases now where I feel like I keep repeating, I think Occam's razor would say it was on part of the artist when it reaches a certain crescendo. But yeah, definitely struggled with feelings of that I could be absolutely fucking insane.
Keep it together, man.
Yeah.
It's just something that happens if you listen to, I'll take Lady Gaga and be playing her over a film, and considering that I'm not a huge Lady Gaga fan, I'm listening to a pop record with a film, so like with Metropolis or Marie Antoinette, so many times that, yeah, it's like, it's kind of an insane activity. Like if somebody who's completely unfamiliar with what I'm working with is, you know, present or seeing what I'm trying to do, and it's just like, I'm sure it comes across as totally nuts, you know. But
I think you've got to balance it with like going for a walk or, you know, having dinner with someone you care about, you know.
Or stop listening to shitty music.
I'm just kidding. Right, except what the product that come out with out of it is something that's very valuable and very significant and very profound in a place where you wouldn't expect to find anything profound.
Sure.
And so on that level, it's reconciling in terms of what the artist is trying to do on some level. You know, yeah, like I said, I always come to the other side, but there's oftentimes, and a lot of times I just won't find it and I'll leave it alone. I'll be like, okay, that was a trip, but it's just not working. But then sometimes it lands in a way that it shouldn't, as far as my intellect goes. Like things inside of me say, no, it's not supposed to do this, but holy shit, it's doing it. And I can relay that after the fact, but I can't relay it until I've gotten to the point where I found the proper timing, you know, or the proper correspondence in the first place.
You know, this idea of correspondence, I mean, to me, you guys were talking about the idea of how reductionists or materialists want to chalk everything up to coincidence. I think it's such an important distinction to say, is it coincidence or a coincidence, like a coinciding of things? And to me, I think a coinciding is particularly profound, and so I don't dismiss coincidence at all, if that makes sense.
Yeah, hey, could I ask you guys, since you guys are like syncretists or whatever, what do you guys think about the whole Dark Side of the Moon matching up with Wizard of Oz thing? Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
That's like the cornerstone of my approach to synchronicity is that phenomenon. So that's what I'm talking about here.
Scott, have you seen that?
No, I don't know what you mean.
Oh man, Scott, you got to check this out. It's it's after the third lion roar of MGM, right?
Right. It's on the roar.
It's what's that?
It's on the roar.
It's on the roar.
It's
yeah.
On the third roar, you start Dark Side of the Moon, and then you let it loop. Then yeah, it's absolutely mind blowing. And so I was shown that when I was really young, and I've been obsessed with that phenomenon ever since, because I couldn't reconcile it in my mind of how this could just happen on its own. And then I didn't know at the time that that's how Pink Floyd started, was by doing these soundtracks. And so the film More and the album Sure. More go in sync perfectly if you play that album that's the soundtrack to the film that they openly made as a soundtrack with it. And it's a flawless sync. And so, and then you have The Wall, which is basically their album over a film that they made. And so that was what happened, is I was told about Dark Side of the Moon, and then I watched The Wall, and then I found out about Obscured by Clouds and The Valley and More. And I was like, wait a minute, but this is what they do. You can't tell me that this is a coincidence. This is how they started. And so since then I've done it with a number of other artists, obsessively, compulsively. I can't stop.
Yeah, Scott, that's something you definitely got to check out, because that's really kind of mind blowing. And it's, yeah, just linking up Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon to The Wizard of Oz. And I mean, you could just even listen to the first, like, or watch the first half hour, and there's just so many great, you know, connections that it's really interesting.
Wow, yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah.
The earliest I've found so far that I can't quite reconcile is actually the Beatles. The Beatles with Rosemary's Baby, which is 1968. So Pink Floyd didn't start doing this until the early 70s. Yet I don't know how that could have happened on its own. So
I haven't heard of that one. So which record is it?
The White Album. So I have it on my Vimeo. I'll send you a link.
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
Yeah, we have a show where we talk all about it. It's in our, what do we call it? It's on our website. I don't know what episode it was. Do you know, Alan?
Oh, off the top of my head, I mean, I could find it very easily. But yeah, there was an episode about Rosemary's White Album. But yeah, I mean, I think basically this is what's interesting to me is what I've been doing over the last few years is kind of contacting different artists who are exploring what to me is the same phenomenon from different angles. So you have someone who's going to see how music and movies will match up. Someone who's going to look at, like Marty, you're doing with the alphabet and how numbers match up. Scott is doing how actual, you know, geography and these measurement systems match up. You know, there are all these people who are kind of taking a different approach, and yet when I see that every one of us is coming to very, very similar answers, and I use the word answers very loosely here, but to say we're kind of coming to the same realizations or finding these things by exploring similar headspaces, it's so incredibly validating to me to see that we're all seeing the same architecture. So it's either a mass insanity or I'm much more lean towards no, we're hitting at something that's very, very real, very, very true. It's just a question of, you know, again, what do you do with that truth? Because you can say this is the architecture of the universe, and I've met a bunch of people who see that architecture as this beautiful, you know, Gaian matrix of this is the nature of our reality. And then you'll have someone else who will look at it and they'll see it as, you know, a Keanu Reeves type matrix where it's an illusion that's designed to trap, you know, this is the, you know, the dark side of the Gnostic vision, the black iron prison or anything like that. And yet I'm able to reconcile that the part we can agree on is that this is the, for lack of a better term, source code of reality. How you want to view that reality is up to you. But let's at least all get on the same page that we're seeing the same source code.
I think it was Anais Nin who said something like, we don't see the world as it is, we see it as we are.
Yes, beautifully said.
Yes, after watching the film Room 237, that's what I took away from it. I was like, well, people are seeing themselves, or they're seeing their angles, they're seeing their own projections on the thing, but that doesn't make it any less valid.
I'm so glad you said that, because that's a great point, because I think that at the core is what art is. You know, a lot of people will ask, like, if I write a song or something, and then, you know, if I'm not complete, you know, if I'm metaphorical or that's or imaginative with the lyrics, that I'm not necessarily trying to say one thing, because you can take all these different interpretations, and that's kind of one of the beauties of art, in my opinion. You know, is that everybody can bring their own interpretation to the table, and I think that's an integral part of art.
And when we start to see the entire cosmos as, you know, for lack of a better term, God's art project, well, then, yeah, you can interpret reality that same way, no?
It was kind of a reconciling moment with my girlfriend when she realized that what I was doing was something, because I was explaining all these things and all these connections, and then I was communicating the different, what you could extrapolate from that and the different possibilities, and she had kind of a realization moment. She was like, oh, you're being creative. It was like, not just like, am I like asserting like a conspiracy theory, though there could be conspiracies involved. Either way, I'm approaching it from a creative perspective, and I'm relating to the material, not just as a spectator, but as a participant. So if I'm being shown something, I'm not just accepting it at face value, like, oh, I get to give this a viewing or whatever, but no, I get to interact with it. And to be able to interact with media is very helpful. Otherwise, it just feels like I'm being programmed, you know?
Well, it's interesting, you know, I've seen so many reviews for the film Room 237, where even, you know, New York Times reviewing it and saying, oh, all the different conspiracy theories. And it's like, I don't see maybe Jay Widener's as a conspiracy theory saying Kubrick helped fake the moon landing. Yeah, okay, that's a conspiracy theory. Everything else just seems like an interpretation of an art piece. So
right.
What they're using the phrase conspiracy theory just really to mean intent. So I feel like that's an important distinction at this point to say, like, how are we even using these terms? But, you know, Marty, you had this idea. Sorry, I think I sort of lost my point, but
I think it's back to the spirit of the age.
Yeah.
everything will be looked on as a conspiracy theory or a hoax that doesn't fit the prevailing paradigm.
It seems like an aversion, like, to acknowledging the significance of something if you take that specific perspective of that it's either this or this. It's either a conspiracy theory or a hoax. It's kind of like a way to get around the thing that's staring them in the face of the significance of the correspondence. It's like, and when it starts adding up to that degree, I think that it can be scary for people because things aren't supposed to do that.
Scott, I love that you keep saying the spirit of the age is that it's a conspiracy or a hoax, because the spirit of the age is literally the zeitgeist, right? It's the same, that's what the word zeitgeist means. So here we have a zeitgeist which we associate with conspiracy, intent, and also skepticism. We have this large skeptical movement that's trying to decry anything that's, you know, outside of reductionist mindset. And here we are holding on going, well, wait, let's back that up a little bit. And I think I realized the point I was trying to make, you know, Marty had this idea of realizing that we're all playing out these archetypes, or, you know, we're all interacting with this on a daily basis. You even said at the beginning of the show that perhaps, you know, the elite might have, the quote-unquote elite might have taught this to their children. But it's sort of like knowing how the game is played or how the architecture exists, knowing that you're in the labyrinth, if you will, it's at least empowering in that respect, that if you can understand the architecture you're working with. So to me, it's like when I realize, oh, I moved to apartment 33, and how does this, why is, you know, from a sink, quote unquote, perspective, it'd be like, oh, it gives me a chuckle. And then I would also say, well, hey, this is perfect. And then I see, why is this not exactly working out? Well, this number has multiple connotations, particularly in the way that I was writing about it. So I guess what I'm saying is understanding that you're playing out this role is in itself an empowering realization, because it allows you to, I don't know, just a better perspective of how you're interacting with this matrixy thing. It's not the clearest point, but does that make more sense?
No, I totally agree with that. I mean, I think this is exactly what the conspirators, I mean, there are conspiracy theories. There's no question, you know, and I think that this is what these people are doing. They have a higher level of education. They understand the world in a much better way. I mean, because they've been passed on this information, just like we were talking about the philosophy of the sun and the moon. You know, what is that more evidence of? Is that more evidence of a god, a grand architect, a great geometer, et cetera, et cetera? When you understand those things and you're passing that information on to your children, and then the rest of the society is dumbed down, well, that automatically gives you a one-up, you know, immediately, just because you know more than they, you know? I mean, how many people have never even philosophically considered something like that? And yet that happens, what, four times a year, you know? And so it's information
knowledge
like
is power, you know, it, and however you obtain that knowledge is beside the point.
Yeah.
I've been having kind of a far out idea around the notion of sublimation, because, you know, there's only one energy, main energy that's moving through us, right? And there's this kind of idea that we're taking what is our sex drive and we're applying it in different ways. And then if you think about that, we create other human beings, like people come out of people, like as a fractal, literally, like people come out of people. That's a profound thing in the first place. But that when we're taking that same energy that will do that according to a certain geometry, and, you know, the baby will come out in a certain a certain way that's pretty consistent. It's always changing and it's always the same. But that when we're applying that to other things, it can't escape from the same dynamics that it would be expressing itself on a different level in the material sense. So you're almost like giving birth to your own creation that can't escape from these patterns. So the patterns that go into creating a child are the same patterns that go into creating our social structures and everything that we see around us. Kind of a far out thought, but it's also kind of the basis of a lot of ideas around alchemy, that the alchemists saw everything as a sexual act, you know, in nature. There, you don't get away from these opposites coming together to create a third thing. Can you dig it?
The cosmic, you know, the entire universe, this alchemical idea of the entire universe being a cosmic or a sexual act is, I mean, that's just an absolute truth in my opinion. Because, I mean, this is the merging of spirit and matter. This is the merging of chaos and order. This is the merging of good and evil. This is the merging of man and woman. And this once again, we can go right back to mathematics. And really, when you put, and why I'm, you know, I'm so happy to be on a show with Scott, because this is what he's showing, that when you put the mathematics to it, it's no longer, in my opinion, speculative. It gives you, once again, it's real knowledge, because math, you can't, you know, there's an exactitude to mathematics. Man didn't make mathematics. Man is only interpreting mathematics from nature itself. When you look at the Star of David, going back to David, once again, that's just the name David in and of itself encodes the moon, the sun, and the moon, right? The number 19 and the number 400. When you look at the Star of David, that's a chalice and a blade. That's a man and woman essentially coming together, the two giving and receiving forces in nature. Well, looking down at your hands, adding 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, using the gematria, this equals 180. So 1 is 8, you know, 2 is 13, 3 is 28, 4 is 19, 5 is 21, 6 is 14, 7 is 22, 8 is 30, and 8 is 30, 9 is 12, and 10 is 13. If you add this up, it's 180. So the 10 fingers of your hand equal 180. So when you and another human being get together and put your hands together, that's a cosmic sexual union, and that is creating the 360 degrees of a circle. And so to me, that's where, okay, that's just the straight math, you know, according to the cipher and everything like that. So it's like, okay, how are you going to deny that when you put mathematics to these things? That there's a real, it goes beyond belief, in my opinion. It's no longer my belief or your belief. It's like, okay, that's just the math. Who's going to argue with that? Totally. I know I went over that pretty quick, but hopefully, you know, you got that. 180 degrees is the interior of a triangle, so it's the sexual union. Two opposites coming together, you know, and that's what's going on worldwide. I mean, that's what's going on universe-wide, you know, centripetal, centrifugal, positive, negative, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think we all got that. We were processing that. So speaking of creations being your babies, I know, Marty, you just wrapped up a book. Scott, you're working on one. Can you guys talk about your upcoming babies?
Marty, why don't you go first?
Oh, yeah. I just finished, I did second editions on volume, my Pi in the English Alphabet series volume, and I literally have volume 2 in front of me right now. I'm going over the proof, so that will hopefully be out in the next week. And then I just did a book called The Peacock's Tales, The Alchemical Writings of Claudia Pavonis. And I actually talk about my relationship with Scott a little bit in the beginning of the book and kind of how it affected me and the synchronicity and the mathematics around it. So, Scott, I got to send you the book, by the way. So yeah, I've got those couple out, and yeah, I just did a video on the Hebrew alphabet as well, talking about giving birth to artistic video or whatever. I did one on the Hebrew alphabet, correlating the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet to 22 digits of pi, and then looking at this in the English equivalent. So that's awesome stuff that's coming out and is out right now. So check that out.
Nice,
cool. And I'm working on a book of my illustrations, putting that together. It's going to have a question about, you know, the inspirations behind it and what it means. And I'm also writing a novel. I've written about a third of it so far, and I'm looking forward to completing that and getting that out later this year.
So what's it about, man?
It's about a quantum computer and a journey of... I don't know that I want to talk too much about it yet.
Sure.
Yeah, because it's still in process.
I have a request here. I know we're going to try and wrap this up, but Marty, you asked Scott a few questions already, but I'd like to kind of round up these last few we've been doing as having the two guests ask each other a question. I know you guys have both spoken, you know each other, but... Let's start here. Scott, if there was a question you had for Marty that you thought, a question you had that you thought Marty could be the one to answer, what would your question to Marty be?
That's a tough one. Just one?
as many as you want, I guess.
Well, what do you consider is the most significant discovery that you've made about language?
Oh, geez. Well, kind of going back to that quote that I said earlier of Alvin Boyd Kuhn, that, you know, getting into language than just, you know, the words on a page or just the letters, that basically that every single letter and the number attached to it is symbolic of something of something deeper in the archetype of our own subconscious. And that's been, out of all the things, all the videos I've done and you know, books I've written and things like that, I mean, I think that's the most powerful thing that I've come across, that these things, you know, like the letter S is referring to a snake, it's referring to a sine wave, and how that this, how I view these things internally, that's been the most, I would say, powerful thing that I've come across. So hopefully that answers that question.
Can I summarize that as you're connecting language with your
symbolic
interior
attributes of nature, maybe?
Yeah.
If you will. Yeah.
You're connecting the interior and the exterior world.
Absolutely,
through language.
Yeah. All right, my turn to ask you.
Sort of alchemy. Yeah, go ahead.
What's the meaning to life?
42. That's easy.
That's easy, yeah.
There's no simple answer to that. It's what you make of it. It's an ongoing discovery. It's a mystery, really. It gets down to it being a mystery. There's no answer to it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I just want to chime in here. One thing is the answer Marty gave, which, and Scott, you summarized as connecting between the inner and outer. I mean, this is why I see all this kind of under the umbrella of synchronicity is, you know, the way that Carl Jung coined this term is basically a meeting of the internal and external environments, right? This is like a pairing. And again, we could take it back to alchemy or any of these things, but I feel like this is why I kind of keep stressing, I feel like we're seeing things through a very similar lens, if not the same lens. Perhaps looking at different things or from different angles, but I feel like the lens through which we're looking at these things are exactly this meeting of inner and outer. And I'm just glad we get to do this with a bunch of really intelligent guys that I can have a different sort of meeting in this respect.
Yeah,
for bringing us together. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Scott.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I appreciate that, too. If I may say one thing too about this, Carl Jung, he has, he really brought forward into the collective consciousness of the ideas of archetypes. I mean, it's a term that's been known for a long, long time. You know, Plato used it and whatnot, but he really kind of brought it forward again. And we talk about, I mean, we're using this language right now. As far as I'm concerned, this entire language is built with, you know, our geometry and things like that. When you look at the word archetype, arc is a reference to mathematics, and type is a reference to letters. So when we talk about the archetypes of the collective unconscious, I think we can really start to learn them through mathematics and letters, if you will. So I just kind of wanted to add that.
I love how when you look at a causal principle of synchronicity, Carl Jung's, he's so focused on probability theory throughout that, and it's all he approaches synchronicity through math, and that seems to be his main argument. Is well, what is actually the probability of this? And not just these things correspond, isn't that interesting, but what is the likelihood that these would correspond to the degree and in the specific ways in which they do, and what that might imply? And I feel like we've managed to stay somewhat true to that approach to the best of our ability, yet at the same time remaining open. And so I sense that from you guys, that you're very open to all sorts of explanations, and that's really important.
Well, Scott might have all the answers, but I certainly don't. You got to remain open, you know, because we're all, like he's saying, you know, it's a mystery. We're all continuing to seek, you know, and anybody that's claiming to have the answers, in my opinion, is full of shit. So,
very well said. I want to do two things here. I appreciate you guys staying on as long as you did. I don't know what your time restraints are, but I want to kind of wrap this up by asking you if you have any sort of closing thoughts, but if you don't mind, then I'd like to keep you for just maybe another 10 minutes. I want to ask you some questions that you may or may not want on the record, so I'm sort of saving those for the end. So
I'm going to need to use the washroom here any moment now, so maybe can we take a break and come back?
Yeah, of course. Sure. Yeah, that works for me. Marty, you around for a few?
Yeah, I got about 10 to 20 minutes and I got to go, but yeah, I got to do the same, so give me 2 minutes here.
Sure, perfect.
Sweet. Okay, be back in a couple minutes.
All right.
The universe is a puzzle. Life is a problem to be solved. It's a conundrum. It's not what it appears to be. There are doors. There are locks and keys. There are levels. And if you get it right, somehow it will give way to something extremely unexpected.
You know, I looked down when you said, I want to hold you guys here for like another 10 minutes, and it was 3:04. So if you would have, you know, another 10 minutes would have been 3:14. Just hang on.
Hello? Hello?
Hello.
Hey,
hello.
Scott, you're back.
Yeah, this is Scott.
Wonderful. So Marty was just saying we're almost at, so if we keep this going another 10 minutes, we'll be at exactly 3 hours, 14 minutes.
That sounds perfect.
So let's do this. Like I said, just as a sort of clean ending point, depending how the other part goes, just do you guys have any sort of closing thoughts that you want to leave people with?
Scott, you?
Closing thoughts. I guess what my work is about is finding patterns where patterns seemingly shouldn't exist and pondering the implications of what that means. And I think it can be a gateway into your own research and exploration of a wide variety of topics. And it has to do with your own life and synchronicity and seeing things around you. And so it's really a method of starting to perceive the secrets in plain sight, starting to perceive the sacredness of everything. And so I think it's a very healthy and worthwhile journey to take. And also very interesting and endlessly fascinating with all of the different patterns that you'll encounter, and the connections that you make are quite humorous and entertaining at times. So I think I recommend the journey to everyone.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I'll leapfrog off that as well. I would just say this: don't let mathematics scare you. There's a quote in, you know, that book, The Little Book of Coincidences in the Solar System, where he says, I think he said something like, astronomy is good for your health. You know, mathematics is good for your health. I think it's a very gratifying exploration. And there's a quote, I forget who it is, but he says, mathematics is no more about equations than poetry is about spelling. And so when you get into this stuff, you realize that, you know, it is, especially when you really pursue all the different angles in which we can look at mathematics, and that includes, you know, geometry, safe geometry, numerology, mathematics, metrology. You realize it's a wonderful, wonderful study, and it's only brought me an enormous amount of joy in my own life. So yeah, I'll just kind of echo what Scott said there, because it was brilliantly, brilliantly said. So.
Well, wonderful. Yeah, you guys have been amazing today. I want to thank you so much for joining us. This has been a real treat for me and something I've looked forward to. I know I only asked you a few weeks ago, but it's actually been something I've been thinking about and dreaming about for a few months. So this is a real pleasure for me. I want to thank you both.
Yeah. Hey,
thank you.
You too. I was really impacted by both your guys' work, and I appreciate you coming on. It's been awesome.
Good talking with you, David.
Talk with you.
So here's sort of just two two questions that I sort of was tempted to ask and didn't. And if at any point you say, you can decide afterwards if you want this included or not. My first question is a really sort of a potentially easy or simple one, is we talked before about the sort of psychedelic nature of what we do. I'm curious, have either of you ever utilized psychedelics in your, let's say, discovery methods?
No, I don't. I just drink some coffee now and then. That's about it.
My own exploration, I have dabbled in psychedelics a lot, not a lot, but a bit. Not so much anymore, mainly when I was like younger, a bit, and not really, mainly just kind of like psychedelic mushrooms or whatever. And I have had some profound experiences on, really just philosophical, but some profound experiences in that state. And I think psychedelics are a doorway into an expansion of consciousness, but I also think that just like anything, you know, every tool is a weapon if you hold it right. You know, I think that they can be very dangerous. I think they can be very mind expanding as well. So I think it's just how it's used. I know a lot of people that have ruined their life on drugs, and I know a lot of people that at the same time it's really helped them as well. So I've had a few experiences that were absolutely life changing on psychedelics, but like I said, it's probably been, I don't know, years since I've done it. So
it's one of the ways into the mysteries. I know some researchers are making that link between the Eleusinian mysteries or in the Egyptian mysteries, that they were actually taking hallucinogenic substances and able to see the gods in that way. It's just another pathway into the mysteries, I think.
Yeah,
and there are many paths up the holy mountain, if you will.
Exactly. Yeah. Even as someone who I feel I've very much benefited from any experiences like that I've had, I definitely agree with you, Marty, that it can be, you know, it's a double-edged sword, or if it's going to use it as a tool, just know that it's a dangerous tool. You know, if you're going to use a power saw, you're going to hold it very carefully, and
yeah.
if you're going to do something as powerful as a psychedelic, to know that you're holding it also very carefully and things like that. But I also think even when it has been a profound experience, I like to stress the idea that, yes, it's only a doorway. I feel like after my first LSD experience, the thing I came out of it saying was like, oh, I don't know if I ever have to do this again. You know, which of course I have, but I remember my first thought being, I don't think I ever have to do this again. It felt like it showed me there was a door there, and now I know where the door is. But I don't know that I need that substance to point it out to me again. And even the guy who used to be our third co-host for the first 64 episodes of this podcast, Bill Klaus, I've seen him, you know, say something recently like, even referring to like smoking marijuana, he said, the plants keep asking me, what are you doing back here? And I just think it's an interesting idea, to be sure.
It's like the spirit world is, you know, he's been in it so many times, it's like, hey man, get your feet off my coffee table, get the hell out of here.
Right.
I've done a very significant amount of psychedelics in my life, and I can honestly say that my most psychedelic experiences haven't been on psychedelics. Very truthfully, I can honestly say that. You can take that for what it's worth.
The secret's in plain sight. One of those hallucinatory agents.
Very much. Yeah, very much for me. Yeah.
I would say more ego breakdowns, being put on the spot, and kind of being humiliated has expanded my consciousness at times. More than taking an external, internalizing an external substance. Definitely gotten to break down more kind of like self-held walls, conditioned and programmed, and kind of like relinquish some of that programming more through interpersonal relationships than I have otherwise.
So here's... Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Marty.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead. That's right.
I was just going to turn, because I know we're trying to like wrap this up, so I just want to skip to my last question, which is another potentially uncomfortable one, is I'm curious about, you know, sort of the financial reality of what we're doing, meaning, whether it's creating videos, you guys put out a lot of content. Some of it, you know, the books someone has to pay for, but a lot of the content is put up for free. And I'm curious, you know, sort of, I'm not asking about your personal finances exactly, but I'm saying, how do you view sort of this alternative media in a sense of the reality that people need to eat and pay their bills, and at the same time, without becoming, you know, an Alex Jones and saying, you know, I have the answers and, you know, sowing fear or something like that. Most of the people that I speak to are not in particularly great financial situations. These have been labors of love, and they've sort of taken a lot out of them. And I'm sort of curious, sort of how, I don't know, sort of how you're doing, and if you see a future in which these things are better supported by the community.
I certainly wish that people would support my work more, in that, you know, there are millions of people who've seen it, but I've seen just a tiny, tiny amount of money come in. And I did spend a whole year of my life doing it out of a labor of love for the Volume 1, and I haven't made nearly enough to even compensate for that first year. So, you know, not to mention Volume 2 in my book, Taking Measure, and all the other things I'm doing. So it would be great if people would, feel more of the, I don't know, the connection to the artist, to support them, you know. It's sort of like with music, you know, you listen to a lot of music, but do you really donate to the artist who made it? Probably not. And so it's kind of a problem of this kind of new media that we're in, where people kind of expect it mostly to be free. And maybe they'll buy your DVD, but probably not. And I wish that that would, you know, kind of shift into some way where we could make a livelihood.
Yeah, this actually hits to the core of what's happening to me right now. I've taken basically 2 years off full-time work and spent a whole lot of money doing, you know, setting up the website and, you know, doing the, you know, the editing of the books and things like that. And yeah, I mean, I've received one donation of $50 in like 2 years, and I'm literally starting a job in 2 weeks, get a full-time job, just because I can't make this work. And so that kind of hits home. I mean, in one respect, I don't want to sell this, you know, that, and, you know, I mean, I want to give this as a gift in a lot of ways. And that's why I do the things free. But, you know, if every single person that came and watched one video just gave a quarter, you know, I mean, imagine, you know, Scott, you could be doing this the rest of your life.
Well, I'd be a millionaire if people just gave me a dollar, you know, quarter. It would be more than enough. But the fact is that they give, like, I don't know, a penny or something. So, it just makes it hard to do it full time. But I want to do it anyway because it's my passion. So I'm going to do it, but it just would be a lot easier if I didn't have to split up my time doing other things just to pay the bills.
Yeah, I mean, I know I'm not going to be able to bring as much information out because now I'm going to be going back to work for 40 hours a week. And that to me is the biggest tragedy, because it's like, God, there's just so many things that I have on my list that I want to look into that I could do a video on or write a book on. But unfortunately, yeah, that's really no longer an option for me anymore. So I guess it's just the way of the world. There's nothing you can do about it. I certainly don't want, I'm not greedy. I'm not a materialist. I'm not, you know, none of that, but it would be nice to be able to do this full time, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how to make that connection, because people are like, every day I get emails from people thanking me, but they don't come with any cash, which is fine, you know, but, making a living is part of what it takes to live in a body here on Earth. So, it'd be nice if people would recognize that a little bit more.
Yeah, I find that the thank you emails are really good reward from a soul level. Like, it definitely fuels me and keeps me going. And at the same time, there are other needs. And Marty, I had a similar thing where I, you know, took time off where I didn't work for a year, and then I was in horrible debt and couldn't make that back and went back to work and then was trying to balance everything. And I'm sort of back at a similar place now where it's like a very awkward growing stage of being big enough that there's an expectation of, you know, having regular shows and lots of books and lots of material. And I get emails from people saying, hey, you know, do you want to work with me on this project and wouldn't this be great? And at the same time, I have to pay my bills. And so I have been working full time for a while. And then just sort of splitting that up. And I find the main thing, I have to sacrifice something. And I've sacrificed a lot of my personal life. I mean, I got married just a few years ago. And, you know, those first few years of marriage have been the most time I spent with my wife. And it was probably the least. And there's just all these sort of reality checks of something's got to give. And I think it's really hard to find that spot of not, again, not being that sellout. I don't think anyone here is trying to be greedy, but yeah, I see the numbers. There are lots of people downloading the show, and every now and then someone throws a little something in. I'm sort of really torn as to how should I say this? Like, either you end up cutting back your output a lot, and just you find the time for it when you can. Because, yeah, I would never stop. This is definitely a passion and a labor of love. And at the same time, I've had this conversation, again, off the record. I've spoken to a lot of people in the sort of alternative field, and most everyone is having a really hard time financially. And I can't figure out how people can be so highly regarded in one respect, and everyone's going, oh, I love your stuff, but, you know,
I know, and then if I got a job at McDonald's, I'd make more, you know, so
right
yeah
they're always hiring.
You know, in one respect, that we may need a new model as well too, where it's like, you know, hey, okay, here's a piece of, And maybe this is coming up in the next few years. I don't know. It doesn't really seem to be going that way, where it's like, okay, if you're going to watch if I put together a 45-minute presentation that I filmed all myself and I did all the research and I bought the books and I spent the time and all of that, that it's like, okay, if you're going to watch this, then automatically, you know, 10 cents comes out of your account or something, you know, something like that, where it's like, you know, you don't have to do advertising and things like that. But yeah, there's so much free content out there, and yet no one, I've heard this, you're not the only people. I've heard this from a lot of other people. Like even Stefan Molyneux was talking about how he has like a million downloads a month, and yet people weren't giving any money, and he had to like repeat it. I was just on the Vinnie Eastwood show, and he was saying, hey man, this is my full-time job. It's 5 days a week, and I don't ask that much, but you know, come on, you know, give a dollar. If I had 11,000 hits in the last week, if everybody gave 10 cents, I'd be fine, you know, but that's not happening. And that's really unfortunate.
Maybe there's a technical solution where there could be like a sort of YouTube where it costs a penny to watch a video or something. And, you know,
very challenging. I'm always afraid that my videos are just going to be taken down because of copyright issues, and there's no way to show what I'm showing without, you know, and so it's like Room 237 made no money. It was the only way that they could come out with that was to make no money because of the copyright issues involved. And so the hope was, is that they put this out, he's gotten recognition. Now maybe he can do something else and be able to pay what's necessary in order to use certain material. But yeah, that's always an issue as well, you know?
Yeah, people even complained about how I do my videos because it's just so, you know, it's just so stark. It's just like you're in a classroom. And I was like, well, I kind of have to do it in that way too, because I don't want to have to worry about any of that. If somebody comes and sues me, it's like, dude, literally, I have about enough money to move out to Oregon the next week, and then I'm broke, you know, and so I can't afford a lawyer or anything like that to, you know, back me up or anything. So I'm forced to do the things like this way, and it was just fine. I'm not, you know, complaining. I'm not playing the world's smallest violin for myself or anything, but once again, it's just really unfortunate.
Well, yeah, and I made Secrets in Plain Sight on my laptop using iMovie with exactly $0 budget. Mm. So,
Yeah, I think we're getting...
And people complain about how I should have hired a professional narrator.
Marty, I think you make an important point. It's not to have a pity party here. I was sort of hoping this kind of meeting of minds is like what I'm really curious to see where people see, like, is there an answer? Because, even, you know, I've spoken to people who say, you know, doing like a Kickstarter or something, when it's like, you do a Kickstarter, even if you have a successful Kickstarter, I see, you know, someone asks for, you know, hey, I need $10,000 to make this project over the next year. And I see people go like, oh, that guy's so greedy, he's asking for $10,000. I'm like, really? Because how much does it cost you to pay your rent and eat for a year? It costs more than $10,000. And then when that year is up and you've made the project, so that paid for the year, but what about your next project? You can't just do a Kickstarter every year.
What about your whole life ahead of you? What are you ever going to retire? Are you going to have kids? How are you going to pay for that? You can't just go from hand to mouth like that for forever. Making $10,000 a year is your plan?
Right.
Not very smart.
That's what I've done the last 2 years, and trust me, it's not working.
Right. I sympathize way a whole lot.
Yeah, I don't know the solution.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of the question is like, yeah, is there, I think, I'll say this here just to be completely blunt, is when Scott, you said about the rest of your life, I was talking to my wife just two nights ago, and she, we've talked about moving to Japan a number of times, and I keep saying like, well, I'd really want to, polish up my Japanese language skills before we did that. And she said to me the other day, she's like, hey, we should really take a good class and stuff. And I was like, well, I don't know when I'd find time for that. And it was just in this moment where I pictured the next few years of my life, and I had this realization. I said, it's really sad that I cannot picture in the next years of my life a time when I wouldn't be stressed out and at a lack of time or money. And I was like, this can't work. This just can't. That realization hit me really hard. And I know both of you guys, I see that you put your books out through Create Space. We've done the same thing. So I know what kind of numbers I have, or I should say I have a pretty good idea of what your numbers look like, both royalties and stuff like that. And I know it's not doing it. So again, you could decide if you want any of this included or not, but if this were to be included, my question to you would be, is there something people can do? Are you looking for someone to like, hey, please buy a book, a DVD, donate? What would be the most immediately helpful thing for either of you at the moment?
Well, $1 million would be great, but other than that, people could buy my products, buy my DVDs, my book, for example.
We'll have links available when we put this up so that people can do that if they want.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, how much, Scott, you were just saying that people write you emails every day or whatever, they're saying, hey, thank you, how much is that information worth to you? I learn more in a 4-hour video watching Scott's video than I did in 4 years of high school, how much do we pay in taxes in high school, give the guy fucking $20, go buy a DVD, go buy a book. Not that much.
Sometimes I get from people that they can't afford to buy Volume 2 for $22, and they wish I would put it on YouTube. And I'm like, well, man, that's my whole business model is I gave Volume 1 away, and I hope that some people will buy my Volume 2, mm-hmm.
And Volume 2, by the way, is great. It's just as good as Volume 1, so.
Thanks. But, it's just, I think the younger generation now has this attitude of everything should be free. And I don't know if I'm off base on that or not, but maybe it's everyone. But it makes it more challenging, but I'm still going to do what I'm doing. I'm going to find a way to do it. And because it's what I want to do with my time on Earth. So It just would be nice to have that be a bit easier.
Yeah.
Because I could get a lot more done if I was supported, you know.
I really hope everyone will support you guys, because I really love what you're doing. But it's, I have to say, I don't say this in a pessimistic way, but I thank God that your answer is, well, even if they don't, I'm still going to keep going because I really appreciate the work. But please, guys, if you're listening, it shouldn't have to be that hard. You should, you know, put your for whatever this is the system that we're in right now. You know, if you love it as much as we all do, then support it if you can.
Well, at least we're not living in a time where we're worried about being burned at the stake.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
We're just worried about paying our bills. So.
Right.
It's a lot easier.
Eviction, the modern form of...
burning at the stake. Yeah. I think Giordano Bruno would have rather been evicted than burned at the stake, but, you know, so...
Yeah. Exactly. It's not as harsh. Guys, I really so again, you tell me if you're cool with that being in there or not. But for real, thank you. This was such a pleasure speaking with you.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, and you know, it's fine with me to include everything here, and it's also fine to not include it. It depends how you all feel about it. So,
I'm easy like Sunday morning. So whatever you guys want to do, it's all good.
Cool. Yeah. No. Like I said, the whole idea of this show is that we basically include everything. But I figured asking about illegal substances and financial situations might be something to at least give you the option of having on or off. So.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah.
Cool. Give us your website.
MartyLeads33.com, MartyLeads33 on YouTube. I've also got a record for sale, by the way. You can get it at ReverbNation.com or iTunes or it's on Amazon.com as well, singer-songwriter. So, and then I got just a couple books, Pine and English Alphabets, Volume 1 and 2. Volume 2 should be out soon. And then the recently released The Peacock's Tales, The Alchemical Writings of Claudia Villanis. So check it out.
Scott, please give us your information, website, and where people can find your stuff.
You can find all my stuff at secretsinplainsight.com. Yeah, I've got an extensive blog there as well that you might enjoy.
I love your blog. No one ever talks about your blog, but for real, man, you have an awesome blog. I hope people check it out.
Great.
Yeah, everyone talks about the videos because I think people are visual, not readers, but that blog is incredible.
Thanks a lot. I'm not going to go into anything because we're wrapping this up, but I really did appreciate what you wrote on Burning Man a while back. That was just awesome. I've gone to Burning Man a number of times, and actually the person who made those giant, not crop circles, but circles is actually an old friend of a friend, but I spent some time with him, and what they do out there is pretty incredible. The biggest size art project per perimeter on the planet was actually created out there where they do right near where they do Burning Man. And that was a really cool article, man. I really loved that. Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot. Yeah, it was fun to write.
Well,
guys, enjoy the hell out of the rest of your day, and good luck with the new books and everything, and Marty, good luck with the move.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, I should have this probably up later tonight or early tomorrow morning, and I'll shoot you a message when it's online.
All right. Hey, thanks. Peace, guys.
Peace. All right, man.
Thank you both.
Take care, guys.
Bye
now.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tomorrow's just an end. But in the same